I'm joined by Kushal Chakrabarty, the co-founder and CEO of Vitana today. Kushal, it's great to have you join us. Some of our listeners are surely familiar with Vitana, but for those that aren't, could you tell us what Vitana does?
Yeah, sure. So Vitana, in a nutshell, in a three-word nutshell, does student loans in developing countries. So we really do two things. We build some of the world's first student loan programs in developing countries. And you can imagine how hard this is. You know, there's no IRS, there's no credit bureau, there's little to no school accreditation to speak of. And, you know, we essentially build these mini Sallie Mae's in countries like Peru, Paraguay, et cetera. The students from those programs appear on our website where, you know, you or your mom or your friend can go make a loan for $25 or $50. And it's really interesting to see because the amounts are so small, like, you know, $100 or $500 goes so much further in these countries than it does here. It takes roughly about 8 to 10 lenders lending anywhere from $25 or $50 each to fund a student. The average loan of which is like about $600. They go finish nursing school, or whether that be a mechanic school or anything. They graduate, they get a job, and over the next about a year or two, they pay you back. So that's kind of the mechanics of what we do. But there's the way we see it really is there's this kind of this last mile of education, because, you know, whenever traditional aid over the last, you know, several decades and, you know, or for the last long periods of time, you know, whenever people have talked about education, whenever traditional aid and traditional development have talked about education, they've always talked about literacy, primary school. You know, that's exactly what the Millennium Development Goals are about. But really, we kind of see this as the last mile. Like, over the last, you know, couple of decades, because of these efforts and other efforts, you know, you have this entire generation of kids that have been going to school, that have been getting an education, whose parents have maybe been microfinance borrowers, and they've been kind of getting this step up. And now they're, you know, finishing high school. They're wanting to do more. They're, you know, they don't want to buy a cow and sell milk. They don't want to necessarily sew Docker's pants. They don't want to, you know, kind of do the same old thing. They want to be a paramedic or they want to be an accountant. And it's really, really interesting because you kind of see how this all comes together, because it really is this last mile of education. Because, you know, when you have these students that are, you know, 20 years old or 18 years old and they've done everything that you've asked them, and if you can get them just another $700 more, if you can get them, keep them in school for just another 6 or 12 or 18 months more, you see these, you instantly make good on, you know, the previous 18 years of time and money that's been invested into their education. Vitana grads see about a 200 to 300% increase in income, which is really about $6 to $18 a day. And this almost sounds too good to be true until you realize, until you compare it to, say, the United States or many other developed countries, like in the U.S., and if you just finish high school, you can go get a job earning minimum wage, let's say $9 an hour at McDonald's or something like that. But if you go to community college and if you just get, you know, a welding certification in 6 months or 12 months or whatever, you know, or you become an automotive mechanic or you become an airplane mechanic or something like that, you know, you earn $40 an hour. This really is that last mile of education. And this is, if you just can get them to finish that 6 more months or 12 more months to get real employable skills, you know, you instantly make good on that 18 years of investment that's happened so far.
Mm-hmm. I want to take a step back into your background. Your profile, I believe, on LinkedIn says that you're trying to create meaning or die trying, which I like a lot. So did you always want to do something? Yeah, it caught my eye, made it into the interview. But did you always want to do something that was socially meaningful? And before I answer that, let me just set up their audiences that you came from Amazon. You worked there for Amazon for several years and were one of the developers on the recommendation engine, which many of us enjoy. So how did you make this transition?
So I can't take credit for making, for building the original recommendations engine. That has already existed when I joined. There were a lot of people much smarter than me who built that originally. But what I was able to do was make it a lot more effective. It's funny to think about, but because know, even though it's such a well-known thing, it actually doesn't, any one suggestion that you make is actually, any one recommendation that you make, whether that be, you know, hey, you bought one book on social entrepreneurship and you bought another, Yunus, you know, Muhammad Yunus's new book that just came out, maybe you'd be interested in this other book. Any one recommendation is really unlikely to get bought, ultimately. But, you know, it's like one in 1,000, it's like one in 10,000. But if you can make one in 1,000, if you can make that 1.5 in 1,000 or two in 1,000, that's still a really small number. But at the scale of a company as big as Amazon, that makes a lot of money. And so that's what I was able to help them do. To go back to your question, so I guess what motivates me isn't so much money as it is doing something useful. Now, granted, money is a valid measure of usefulness, but it's certainly not the only one. And so I left Amazon in about June 2007. And you know, it's funny because when you leave one of these, when you leave one of these companies, the default thing to do is kind of start your own company. Mm-hmm. And I had a couple ideas for what you know I could do afterward. There were for-profit startups, and you know, the idea that has evolved into Vitana today was one of those ideas. It was another idea bubbling around on the side, and. You know, going back to this point about, you know, what motivates me isn't necessarily money, but doing something useful. I came to a point, you know, as you start progressing with a few of these, you start fleshing out these ideas. You know, what's really necessary to make this work or make that work? And all of these ideas had a lot of traction behind them, including, you know, what has now evolved into Vitana. But I came to this very specific decision point that, you know, yes, I could start a company that is successful. Would make me, you know, $10 million or something like that. Or I could start Vitana that, if successful, would help 10 million people. And take a step back, and if you think about it, if it's really not about the money, if I really am, you know, for me this was a mental process, like, you know, I was thinking to myself, well, if it's not just about the money, Vishal, well, there's a very clear winner here. Between $10 million and 10 million people, you know, the choice is obvious if it's really not just about the money. And here I am. It's not just about the money. It's about doing something that's useful.
Mm-hmm. Did you have an interest before growing up in education or in helping people? Or how did you gravitate towards microfinance and for using it for education? How did this idea distill itself in your mind?
Sure. So there's two questions there. So how did I originally get interested in education, and how did this idea specifically come about, I guess, with microfinance? So it's actually the other way for us. We didn't start with microfinance and ended up with education. We started with education, and then, well, the question was, how do we make this feasible? How do we make this actually work in a scalable, efficient, effective manner? And one of the answers was microfinance. The original way that, so to make this a little bit more concrete, growing up, I was honestly kind of a jackass in school. I didn't necessarily study as hard as I should have, and didn't go to as many classes and slept through most of the classes I went to. But
that
college
sounds,
is really
sounds
a big...
like the DNA for an entrepreneur.
yeah, maybe. But college was really a turning point for me. I was really a jackass in high school, and I had two teachers that really believed in me and took a risk on me and all but physically kicked my ass into shape. And I really had those two teachers and some really amazing mentors in college who kind of, it's like, look, Vishal, you aren't dumb. You've clearly got a lot of potential. That was a word that got used a lot when I was a kid, potential. But you just need to, you know, somehow direct it. And in college, I went to UC Berkeley. Was a really incredible opportunity for me to kind of find what I love doing and what I actually was sort of good at doing, which was computer science. And it was just a really big turning point for me. And it's interesting when you think about it, because that's also the case for a lot of people. You see these microfinance borrowers, you know, as part of the whole process of putting together Vatana, putting together the core concepts. You know, we started with this concept that education was important and that there was need in the world. There was this New York Times article that I remember reading back in September 2007 that talked about this rickshaw driver who needed, who was spending something like 30% of his income to send his son to the third grade. And 30% of your income is a lot of money, whether you're making, you know, $300,000 a year or $10,000 a year. I mean, that's a large amount of money. And there are a couple of reactions you can have to this, you know. Reaction number one is that, wow, this guy is amazing. Look at the commitment to the next generation. Look at the commitment to commitment to education. This guy is absolutely amazing. And that's true. He is amazing. But my reaction was a little different. My reaction was, yeah, this guy's amazing, but he's actually too amazing. For every one person that can somehow pull this off, that can somehow scrape it together, how many other people are falling through the cracks? Mm-hmm. Which is just a really broad point about there's need in the world and that education is important, but it's certainly nothing actionable. It's not something you can start an organization around. But to me, that was a challenge to kind of start reading and start talking to lots of organizations, to talking to microfinance borrowers, to talking with just anyone who would talk with me to figure these things out. And from that basis, you start seeing a lot of really interesting things come together. For example, one of the things that we see a lot of and that Vatana was kind of founded off of was, you know, the number one thing that as soon as a microfinance borrower gets a loan and starts making a little bit more money, just whether that's a couple dollars a day, the number one thing that they start spending that money on is on their children's education. It doubles, basically. It goes up by about 93%. The number two thing that they spend money on is food. And that goes up by about 23%. There's a very clear thing that people are telling us, both by their stories and also where they're putting their money, that is telling us that this is really important and that's education. Mm-hmm. It's funny when you take like the thousand step back perspective. You know, there's one, you know, when you talk to these people, it's like there's one thing that everyone says, I want my kids to go to school, that's why I'm doing this. If you take a step back, it's like, wait a second, that's what everyone says. Whether you're in Peru, whether you're in California, whether you're in, you know, Israel or Palestine, if there's one universal constant of everyone on the planet, it is that I want my kids to have a better chance at life. I want them to school, I want them to get a job, I want them to have a better life than I did. That was a longer answer than you asked for, but that's the answer.
Sure, but that's a good lead-in to my follow-up question. It's a universal need. There's a lot of problems in bringing solutions to that need. So how did you carve out the approach for Vatana, starting with education? What was the process like to land on microfinance and then to get going and reading on the website? I'd love for you to talk a little bit about how you're starting to systematize and create these systems for educational loans in developing communities, which hadn't existed before. And that's a lot of questions right there.
No, it's fine. So the way that we first started about thinking about this is that we started with this, you know, there was this original spark of an idea. I mean, I spent a lot of time in India just growing up, and you know, just if you're in India or if you're in a lot of these developing countries, you can't, you know, poverty, it's not something you talk about, because it's something that you see every day. It's just part of life. It's not even called poverty. It's what you see. It's what you see every single day. And that's why I spent, you know, over the course of my life, probably 3 or 4 years in India. But this New York Times article was kind of just, for whatever reason, it was that crystallizing moment. But again, it's nothing actionable, and that's where you start reading. And the reason that, you know, the original reason that we started to go with microfinance, the original reason that this is kind of the thing that we started to build it around, the concrete delivery mechanism, was for a few reasons. You start putting the pieces together. You start talking to these microfinance borrowers, and they tell you one after another that, yes, I want these loans. I want my kids to get these loans. You talk to the students themselves. It's like, yeah, I don't want to sew doctor's pants. I want to be a paramedic. I want to be an accountant. When you talk to the microfinance organizations, it's like, yeah, we know our clients want this, depending on the country that we're talking in, but anywhere from 10 to 20 to 40% of an existing microfinance client base wants a student loan like this every year. Latin America, we see roughly about 10%. Asia, we see about 20%. India, we see about 40%. You talk to the funders here, and you know, you hear things like, yes, we know education is an incredibly powerful tool to break the cycle of poverty. All of this kind of just begs the question, you know, if this is so fantastic, if everyone wants to do this, if everyone wants to get one of these loans, if everyone knows how powerful one of these loans is, you know, why isn't this happening already? And at that point, no one was doing it. There just wasn't a way for someone to get a loan to go to college. It just wouldn't happen.
And let's just be, let me ask a follow-up question. And the reason is because even if they went to their local MFI, they couldn't get enough loans. The loans were dedicated for different, professional or entrepreneurial or purchasing things, and they couldn't amass enough loans to fund that educational semester or vocational program, et cetera, right? That's the reason.
Well, so theoretically, an MFI does due diligence on every loan that it gives out, and it's for a specific purpose, right? It is to help you take your roadside food stand and mm-hmm. build capacity, or to buy a sewing machine so that instead of sewing things by hand, you're now sewing with this. And, you know, it is intended for a micro-entrepreneurial purpose. And while some MFIs do this better than others, there's a due diligence process involved in making sure that that is what it's used for.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, you could go to a loan, you could go to a bank, and you could say, hey, I want a loan to go to college, and they would say, well, we don't do education loans. And if you went to the MFI, well, you know, assuming you didn't lie to them and said,
right.
you know, hey, I'm going to buy a sewing machine, and really you went to, you know, nursing school with that, they wouldn't give you a loan. We don't do education loans.
So it just wasn't done, even though people were asking for them.
It just isn't done in most places right now, and it wasn't done in more or less every place before. And so, you know, the answer is, the reason that it wasn't done was I was basically stuck in this catch-22, that because no one has invested in higher education loans before, there isn't a track record today. And because there isn't a track record today, no one's investing today. But because no one's investing today, there never is a track record. So you're literally just stuck in this circle. No track record today, no investment today, no track record ever. You're just going around in the circle. And Vitana's original observation, like the key observation behind Vitana, and I'm a geek, and I love building things. I'm an engineer at heart, although I haven't written code in a little while. The amazing thing about Vitana was that there's something really special about the power of a community to come together on the internet, and where one person couldn't invest $50 million, a million people can invest 50 each. It's essentially a form of risk distribution, right?
Mm-hmm.
And this is something that's possible because, you know, because of technology, right? This wouldn't have been possible 30 years ago. And so this enables two things. You know, one is that it enables me to immediately start building student loan programs and provide those students to get access to money, and that enables this incredible, profound impact. Right? Because if you think about it, you know, you essentially triple your income. Like, a Vitana graduate essentially triples their income. And tripling your income, again, is a lot of money, whether you're talking about $100,000 to $300,000 or $10,000 to $30,000, or $6 a day to $18 a day. But at that lower level, when you're talking about going from $6 to $18 a day, that's a completely different jump in, you know, socioeconomic status. You know, going from $1 million a year in the annual income to $3 million, your life isn't probably going to change that much. Going from $6 to $18 is a profound change in your life. But if you think about something else too, right? You know, that is a profound change in your life. But more than that, you think about, you know, these are like, you know, 20-year-old women or 25-year-old like people who have kids.
Mm-hmm.
They're 2 years old and 3 years old or 5 years old, but they're sad. Many of them have kids. Some of them are single moms. you know, this is a common situation. If you think about the daughter that grows up in, a household where mom is a college-educated nurse versus mom is, you know, sewing doctor's hats for a living, there are innumerable
benefits that come with that.
I mean, it's a completely different life trajectory, right? Like the default life trajectory of that daughter of a college-educated nurse is completely different than what the default outcome for that other family is, for that other daughter. It's on so many levels. The things that you think about, how you think about them, the kinds of options that you have access to, it's just a completely different life. And so it really is the situation where not only does it completely change the life of that person, it also changes it completely, once and for all, breaks the cycle of poverty in that family.
So let me switch gears for a moment and ask about how you got your initial revenue. Was Vitana self-funded, and do you now use a tip jar, right, to raise funding, which is where people can donate a percentage of their donation to cover overhead costs, or do you also go to institutional funders or private donors?
So Vitana, when Vitana first started, we had, I put in some of my own money. I didn't, I'm not a millionaire or anything like that, but I had a little bit of money left over in savings from my Amazon, time at Amazon. We had some pretty amazing, people who have gotten involved, from the very beginning, some from a little bit later. A lot of our seed funding comes from some very top-class entrepreneurs and executives of some very well-known companies like Amazon or Apple or Microsoft, et cetera. And so, I had people who believed in what I did, who knew what I did at Amazon and were willing to believe in me to kind of make this new thing happen. And so, these are people that have put in some money to help Vitana build up an organization, and until we get to our own break-even self-sustaining point, they are providing some seed funding to make that happen. Now, the way Vitana makes money long-term to pay for itself is that when you make a loan, we promise you that, let me first tell you how we don't make money, and then I'll tell you how we do make money, basically. It's the easiest way of explaining this. So when you make a loan on Vitana, we promise you that 100% of your loan goes to the students. So we usually have a local partner on the ground. And conceptually, let's talk about this $25 loan that you yourself make. Obviously, there's a bigger $600 loan that a pool of lenders have made, but let's just talk about your $25. So let's say you make a $25 loan. We get your $25, we pass your $25 on to our local partner microfinance organization, but then passes on $25 to the local students. The student goes to school, and over the course of anywhere from 6 to 12 to 18 months, he graduates and gets a job. And when he starts repaying, he, let's say, conceptually pays back his money. Mm-hmm. And so the local partner actually charges a small amount of interest. It's usually about 10%, which is actually much, much, much less than the traditional microfinance rate, for a number of reasons that I'm happy to get into afterwards. So let's say they charge 10%. That number is still, like I said, it's about 10 to 15%, but to make the math easier, let's say 10%. So let's say the student repays $27 on that $25. The local MFI keeps that to extra $2, and this goes to helping them pay their local salaries, rent, et cetera, things like that. And they give us back $25, and we give you back your $25. So we're not making any money off of that whole kind of loan going back and forth. On the other hand, this is actually a pretty powerful point. If you compare it to, say, the Red Cross or some of the more traditional nonprofits, us being able to pass through that full 100% is a pretty strong statement of how we believe about being transparent, about being honest.
Absolutely.
About a lot of these things. We need to pay our rent too, right? And so as part of the checkout process, as part of you making the loan, we give you the opportunity to also make a tip. And this is a completely optional donation. Mm-hmm. You don't have to make it if you don't want to. You'll never hear from us again. It's not a guilt trip in any sort. It's completely optional. You can set the amount as you want or not. And it turns out many people who make a loan also make a donation, and that helps us offset some of our costs. And over time, that helps pay for more and more of our costs. But right now, that is beginning to offset some of our costs.
So how do you plan your growth strategically when your revenue from that optional contribution by lenders is so nebulous? I mean, there's...
I wouldn't say it's nebulous.
No? Okay. I was going to say you can discern some patterns, but go ahead.
I wouldn't say it's nebulous. The specific numbers are that, you know, somewhere about... about 60 to 80% of lenders also make a donation, and when they make a donation, they make a donation that's about 15 to 20% of their loan size. Now, I know the specific numbers, but I don't necessarily want to get onto it in a public arena, but those are specific quantitative numbers that at scale, and right now are already numbers that are fairly stable. They don't change on a week-to-week basis. It's the law of large numbers, essentially. As these are numbers that are stable numbers, the averages aren't changing, aren't fluctuating wildly, because if you have 1,000 lenders that come in over the month, or 1,000 lenders that come in over the week, you know, that number isn't going to change significantly on average. And so around that, you can start making projections, because, well, you essentially bet on the law of large numbers. And if you think about it, the difference with us is that in our case, and you have to imagine myself putting these big, gigantic air quotes around everything I'm saying next. You know, a 60 to 80% of people donating 15 to 20% is actually a pretty good quote-unquote margin. It's about 10 to 15% margin, which is actually the kinds of margins that a retail company makes. Mm-hmm. It's just that in our case, the quote-unquote margin is outside the actual purchase,
right.
The actual, you know, quote-unquote purchase, right? And so while that amount is, theoretically variable for us, it is statistically stable. But if you're a retail company, yes, you don't know that next quarter you're going to have sales that are 10% higher or 10% lower.
Mm-hmm.
You kind of make projections around it, but you assume that it's not going to just drop off like by 80%. And around that, you can start making predictions and projections. And it's exactly the same situation that we do.
Okay, I'm glad
it's just it's a slightly different... Sorry?
No, I'm glad I asked that. My initial assumption is, as you heard, was that it wouldn't be that stable, but I suppose it makes sense.
Yeah.
So let me go back to, I know we have limited time, but it's so interesting. You had this engineering background with Amazon. You said that a lot of people trusted you and supported you in the beginning days of building and coming up with the idea for Vitana. How did you have to convince them? Did they like the idea? Did they just believe in your potential so wholeheartedly? I mean, that's quite a transition. Couldn't they say, well, what does he know about nonprofits and what does he know about microfinance? And he benefited from education, but that's not the same as giving access to it to other people.
No, that's a really good question. And I think, I'm what you would call a social entrepreneur. But there are lots of entrepreneurs out there, and I'm not particularly special compared to any one of them. I did well enough at Amazon, and I helped Amazon make enough money that I had, when I left, a couple people tell me, let me know what you're doing next. You might be interested.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time, I didn't really know what that meant. I thought, yeah, sure, we'll grab coffee and I'll let you know what I did this month. That's not what it means. It means, do something interesting and we'll write you a big check.
I'm glad you cracked the code for us.
Yeah. Well, it took me a while to crack that one myself, unfortunately. Maybe I'm just a little bit more dense. I don't know.
No, I wasn't being facetious. I wouldn't have thought.
Yeah. There certainly is an element of, okay, we've worked with this person in the past, and we trust him, and he's done really good things in a few different areas, so I trust that in the next thing that he'll do, he'll also do something interesting. There's certainly an element of that, but more than that, I would say is, you know, for any young entrepreneur, and I'm not anything special, any entrepreneur will tell you this, is that to really do well, you kind of have to just show that you're always making progress. We are a tiny company. We have 5 full-time employees. And I'm very proud of what we've been able to do over the last, 2 years, a year and a half. Not 2 years, really, at this point. But we've been able to do a lot with relatively little. And if you're a funder, that's exactly what you're looking for. You're looking for someone who's been able to make a lot happen with extremely little. And what you're looking for as a funder is very different at month one than it is at month two, or rather month one versus year one. But you're looking for someone who, you know, starts with nothing and can build something on top of it and can continually make something happen out of nothing, really, in a very little way. And over time, if you keep showing that, hey, look, you gave me $10,000 3 months ago and look what I've done. And $10,000, if you're talking about 1 or 2 employees, is actually not that much money. Mm-hmm. Or certainly if you're talking about travel and visiting MFIs and things, it's actually not that much money, but if you can make a lot happen with relatively little, people will trust you more and more, and you can get up to larger amounts and start putting together a staff of 5 people or 10 people or whatever, and you can keep building on that. And that's really the case that happened with us, because honestly, maybe he's done cool things, but what does he really know about education, or what does he really know about microfinance? And when I first started out, I was laughed out of more meetings than I care to really admit. But for me, that was more of a challenge to see. I was like, all right, well, I clearly did not know enough about what I was talking about this time. Mm-hmm. Next time, I really need to. Mm-hmm.
How did you go about learning those areas? Was it talking to people, reading, volunteering in microfinance?
All of the above, really. It was reading whatever I could get my hands on. I was talking with whoever would be willing to talk with me. Mm-hmm. All of the above. Mm-hmm. You do whatever you can to figure out whatever you need to. And that, I would say, is really the... I mean, again, I'm not anything special. That's something any entrepreneur would tell you, whether it's someone who owns a liquor store on the side of the road or whether it's a technology entrepreneur or a social entrepreneur. You have to make a lot happen with extremely little. And... whether you're a social entrepreneur or a for-profit entrepreneur, that's really what it's all about. You have nothing, and you're really making something out of nothing.
And another expression of that I think is worth mentioning in regards to Vitana is you've got some really wonderful pro bono legal counsel, which I don't think we have time to get into, unfortunately, and I have so many more questions for you, more about just around a lot of areas around your advisors and the legal counsel, but I've seen you... As I mentioned to you, I've been following Vitana for probably pretty close to your inception in September 2008, and have seen your growth.
It was actually September
2007. 2007. Oh.
Yeah. So we launched. So we, the New York Times article that I always talk about is kind of like back in September 2007. We started putting things together, and we really got started around mid-2008 in a meaningful way. We had a core concept put together. We had some basic idea. A lot of that, the Catch-22 that I talked about, was mid-2008. We got our first funding in October 2008, or September 2008, rather. We launched publicly in May 2009, and we've been growing at about... So right now, loans get funded on the website in about 3 days on average, 2.9 days on average.
That is fast. Month. I'm glad you mentioned that. I was going to ask that's interesting.
So every month, right now, about 30% more students get a loan, which really means every 3 months, the number of students getting a loan through Vitana is doubling.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very proud of what the team has been able to do and what the community has been able to accomplish. We're working in 5 different countries right now, but, I look around and there's so much more we can do, right? There's actually students in Nicaragua and Vietnam being put on wait lists, which on the one hand speaks to the power of one of these loans. It's a $700 loan, which doesn't seem like a whole lot when you contrast it with you know, the $20,000 or $50,000 that it costs for 1 year of American education.
Mm-hmm.
But $700 in these countries is more than enough to help them completely finish their degree. So on the one hand, it speaks to that power of that $700. On the other hand, it's a terrible, terrible thing, right? Because you have someone postponing an entire year of their life,
mm-hmm.
and maybe not even being able to go because for whatever other life reasons that happened in between, for $700. And so that's really why we are working so hard. I mean, I was up until about 3 in the morning yesterday, and you know, the team works really hard. It's just, you know, how do we get this out to more people faster in as many countries as fast as we can?
Mm-hmm.
And that really kind of brings us back to that social entrepreneurship point that, you know, we work just as hard as anyone, you know, in any entrepreneurial setting. It's just that we are doing it not necessarily to make a whole lot of money out of this, because honestly, we're not making a whole lot of money off of this. But it's about really doing something that is useful,
mm-hmm.
and
absolutely
meaningful.
And there's a really interesting story on the website about a student you funded in Nicaragua and helped him get a loan to complete law school. And then when he did that and was placed in a firm, he came back and offered Vitana pro bono legal counsel through his firm, which is, I'm sure
yeah,
that's just
Howard
one of them, but that's wonderful.
Yeah, Howard is an absolutely amazing guy. Howard got a loan through Vitana back in September 2009. It got funded in about 2 weeks. He re-enrolled in law school. He finished his last semester. He graduated back in January, and got a job. Got a promotion. Rather, he got not one but two raises in the time intervening. And we got an email from him about 3 or 4 weeks ago. At this point, it was really funny. He was like, "Hey, you know, Kushal, I just wanted to let you know," or Kushal and Nick, who's our partnerships manager, "I just wanted to let you know that I got this promotion that I mentioned, and now I'm an associate attorney." And my boss was telling me that, well, now you get to work directly with clients, and if you actually want, you can also even do pro bono. And he's this amazingly telegenic, you know, photogenic guy with this, you know, huge smile. We've all just kind of fallen in love with him when his first profile first went up, because he has this brilliant million-dollar smile. So we actually have him on video afterwards. He says that, you know, I was promoted to an associate attorney. My boss was telling me, you can work directly with clients and maybe even do pro bono. And he takes this dramatic pause, pauses, and he puts out his finger. It's like, you know, and in that moment, thought about Vitana. Like, oh, holy! It's just, we were all on the ground. Just, oh my God, this guy is amazing.
And as you mentioned, you have his initial video when he was applying for the loan,
yeah.
And then this one where he's offering his pro bono legal counsel.
Yeah.
It's really wonderful. There's a change in him. It's very visible.
Yeah, the visual contrast is just amazing because, you know, in the first video, he's wearing this blue shirt and this tie, khakis, and he's very, you know, clearly trying to impress us, which is fine. I mean, obviously, if I were in that same situation, I'd be doing exactly the same thing. And in the next video, we have we interviewed him at his office, and he's wearing a suit. He's got this, you know, this bookshelf of law books behind him. The visual contrast is just amazing. And then you start hearing him talk. It's just mm-hmm. how much more confident and articulate mm-hmm. he is. And he like, if you ever want a lawyer in Nicaragua, remember that you have me. If you ever need someone in Nicaragua, just let me know. I want to work for you pro bono. I mean, we were just floored. We didn't know what to say. I'm not speechless very often, but I was speechless.
Right.
Howard is absolutely amazing.
It's so great to talk with you. As I mentioned, I've got more questions, but perhaps we'll have to have another conversation later. And this has been wonderful. Is there anything else, Kushal, that you wanted to mention before we stop today?
No, I think that's all. It's been wonderful talking.
For more interviews about cause capitalism, visit causecapitalism.com.